Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida Police Benevolent Association, representing law enforcement, correctional, and correctional probation officers, strong advocates of keeping law enforcement and correctional services a core public function of government. The Florida PBA online at flpba.org. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through American Airlines with daily direct flights from Tallahassee to Miami and Dallas, with connections to over 270 domestic and international destinations. Fares and information available online at aa.com. And from
Hopping Green & Sams Law Firm. For over 30 years, with offices in Tallahassee, representing clients facing challenges and opportunities with government. This is Diane Carr of Hopping Green & Sams, on the web at hgslaw.com.
WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
After struggling through a few budget shortfalls, Florida lawmakers say they're happy to have a little bit of money to spend this year.
We're not here for a feast today because the feast scenario is not here. Maybe in the past we experienced that, but right now we're not there. We're recovering, so we have something to eat.
Several abortion bills are now headed for a floor vote, but not before passions ran high in the last committee stop with some Florida lawmakers going against their own party.
To me, it is abhorrent that anyone would perform or have an abortion because they don't like the race or the sex of the child. But frankly, I think as a conservative Republican who keeps saying, let's get out of your lives, except when we want to stay in it, I'm concerned about that.
And we'll meet some scientists and business people who think the Sunshine State should be making more electricity out of sunshine. I'm Tom Flanagan, and welcome to Capitol Report. Money, dough, the green stuff. That's what Regan McCarthy reports a group of lawmakers spent their Wednesday talking about. Who doesn't get it, who does, and how much the state is willing to give them.
After working through a number of budget shortfalls, lawmakers say they're glad this year to see a little extra money left over in reserves. Though Representative Seth McKeel, the House Appropriations Committee chair, says creating a balanced budget was no walk in the park.
And although there is a little more money to work with this year, the task that was before us this year is certainly still very difficult.
McKeel, a Republican from Lakeland, is the chair of the House Appropriations Committee. Meanwhile, Representative Ben Albritton says he thinks the House budget bill puts the state on the right path moving forward.
Today is not a feast. We're not here for a feast today because the feast scenario is not here. Maybe in the past we experienced that, but right now we're not there. We're recovering, so we have something to eat. What that means is we have to be focusing on the critical points in this, the critical points of funding, what's important to us.
And Albritton isn't the only one who's been hungry. Just ask the lawmakers over in the Senate, like Senator Jack Latvala.
I've heard a lot of the mustard, and we got the lettuce and the tomato, but we do not yet have the answer to my question on the ham.
Latvala is asking about an amendment that would make students eligible for grant money at a few more private colleges and universities. It's a move the amendment's sponsor, Senator Aaron Bean, says shifts the ham sandwich. That's just a small part of a larger education increase both chambers are considering. The House and Senate plans include increases to higher education to make up for a cut the state universities took in the current fiscal year, and they've both earmarked about $2 billion of new money for K-12 education. Some of that would go to teacher pay increases, but how those bumps would be doled out is still a point of contention. Governor Rick Scott wants across-the-board pay raises for teachers, and Jerry McDaniel with the governor's office dropped by the House meeting to remind committee members of that.
He would like to especially thank you for work on teacher pay, like to continue the debate working with you on the allocation methodology on teacher pay.
The House plan would send about $600 million to districts, which could be used for a number of things, including pay raises. The Senate plan would send districts $500 million to be used specifically for teacher pay raises. So under the Senate plan, every teacher would get a raise and some would get a little extra based on performance. Another area of contention stems from the healthcare budget. Some lawmakers are raising concerns in the House that their chamber's budget plan doesn't include money for expanding Medicaid, either under the Federal Affordable Care Act or another plan. But Representative Matt Hudson, a Republican from Naples who chairs the House Healthcare Appropriations Committee, says that's a conversation for a different time.
This is not a debate about Medicaid expansion. We had a select committee that thoroughly addressed that issue and provided a recommendation to this body. We're here to pass a budget, and this, members, is a good budget.
Hudson says the House's proposed budget does fully fund the Medicaid program as it stands now and even expands it to about 600 more children. Other new proposed spending in the budget includes employee pay raises and new money for building maintenance, something lawmakers say is long overdue. The budget lawmakers are working on now will take effect at the change of the fiscal year in this coming July. The state's entire current budget is $69.9 billion. The new budget lawmakers are proposing differs by chamber, but both are recommending what comes out to be a little less than $74.5 billion, and both leave almost $3 billion in reserve. Once each chamber passes their full budget, leaders will meet to hammer out the differences between the two plans in what's called a conference. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Several abortion bills are now headed to the Florida House floor after clearing their last committee stop today. They include a bill that seeks to ban abortions based on the sex or gender of the unborn child. But as Sasha Cordner reports, lawmakers had mixed feelings on the issue, at times voting against their own party.
The abortion issue is always a controversial one, and each year at least one abortion bill inflames passions among Florida lawmakers as they vet the issue. On Wednesday, that bill was a measure sponsored by Republican Representative Charles Van Zandt of Keystone Heights.
So the purpose of this legislation is to protect unborn children from prenatal discrimination through abortions based on the child's sex or race.
The bill also requires people who perform abortions to sign an affidavit swearing they have no knowledge the procedure was done solely because of the race or sex of the unborn child. If it's found that the provider had known, they could face a third-degree felony and a $10,000 fine. Backers of the bill include the Florida Catholic Conference and Florida Family Action, and opponents of the bill include the American Civil Liberties Union, or the ACLU, and Planned Parenthood. Kelly Dupree of the Florida Alliance of Planned Parenthood called it a, quote, discriminatory proposal that interferes with a woman's medical decision.
If this bill becomes law, women of color will face racial profiling in the doctor's office. All women will have their motives and character questioned on the exam table. HB 845 is an anti-women's health measure dressed as an anti-discrimination law. I urge you to vote no on this bill.
One lawmaker who was battling with whether to vote no on the bill was Republican Representative Kathleen Passidomo of Naples. She's the vice chair of the House Judiciary Committee, the panel that vetted the bill Wednesday.
I don't like the bill, but I don't like the concept even more. I mean, to me, it is abhorrent that anyone would perform or have an abortion because they don't like the race or the sex of the child. But frankly, I think as a conservative Republican who keeps saying, let's get out of your lives, except when we want to stay in it, I'm concerned about that. And so I will support the bill. But again, these kind of issues are not the kind of things that we should be handling here in the Florida legislature.
Republican Representative Heather Fitzenhagen of Fort Myers agreed that this could be seen as more government intrusion, but unlike Passidomo, she voted against the proposal along with her Republican colleague, Representative Ray Pilon of Sarasota.
As a former law enforcement officer, I think if we're going to really attack criminal activity, we should do it in a criminal manner. Not in a manner that puts a doctor on the spot. I think that's the wrong person to place the blame on.
Intense debate went back and forth between Republicans and Democrats on the abortion bill, and the panel's chairman, Republican Representative Dennis Baxley, tried to calm the waters with an impassioned plea. He urged the fellow members of his committee to put aside their party differences and their pro-life, pro-choice arguments to look at the bigger picture.
I implore you, just make this one tiny step for a little girl. Folks, I have 8 grandchildren. 5 of them are little girls. God forbid that it would be legal for somebody to destroy one of those little girls simply because they were a beautiful little girl. And that's all we're saying. That's all we're saying. Can you make that tiny step towards each other?
The bill passed 10-7 with Representative Daphne Campbell of Miami as the lone Democrat to vote for the proposal. And while it may not have changed anyone's votes on that particular bill, Maxley's speech did change the vote of Democratic Representative Jared Moskowitz on another abortion measure. It would make it a separate crime to cause or contribute to the death of a fetus that can live outside the womb. Moskowitz says he would rather a plan that would enhance the penalties rather than a separate charge.
Before I heard the chairman speak, I was going to vote against this. But I thought the chairman, quite frankly, gave one of the better arguments I've heard in a long time.
That measure passed 12-4 with Moskowitz and Campbell voting alongside Republicans. But there was one measure that the House Judiciary Committee approved with a unanimous vote. That bill terminates the parental rights of a man who raped a woman and could allow that woman to make the choice herself whether she would have an abortion. All three abortion measures now head to the House floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. Still to come on Capitol Report, school choice groups push for funding equality between charter schools and traditional public schools.
We're not a separate system. This isn't de facto de jure segregation any longer. This is a civil rights issue.
And you'd best pull over to the curb and step away from the iPhone. A ban on texting while driving is heading for a House vote. The bill would let police write tickets carrying a $30 fine.
It was so frustrating and sad to see people driving down the road texting, and me as a law enforcement officer, I couldn't do anything about it.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, committed to helping high school students with disabilities graduate and advance to jobs, post-secondary education, and a bright future. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org.
School choice groups say they want parity in Florida's education system. That parity mainly comes in the form of funding for building and maintenance. Lynn Hatter reports the group held its annual rally at the Capitol today, with parents and school children playing an active role.
Swing Low, Sweet Chariot was written in the 1800s. Some say it was used as part of the Underground Railroad. It was a popular anthem during the 1960s civil rights movement, and Wednesday it became part of a message that Frank Biden, younger brother of Vice President Joe Biden, brought to school choice supporters in a rally at Florida's Capitol.
The funding that you children receive and you parents receive for your schools is significantly less than that of other public school children. We are the public system. We're not a separate system. This isn't de facto de jure segregation any longer. This is a civil rights issue.
School choice supporters, especially proponents of charter schools, have railed against what they see as a disparity in funding. A common refrain: charter schools are public schools and therefore deserve to have the same amount of public money. A proponent of that argument is Republican State Representative Janet Atkins.
So this inequity in funding is not sustainable. If we want to continue to have school choice in Florida, we absolutely have to solve this problem of our charter schools only getting about 65% of the funding that our district-managed schools receive. And so I'm committed to solving that problem.
Charter school teachers are paid with public dollars, the same as their traditional school counterparts. Charters also get the same amount of money per student as traditional schools do. The major disparity has been in the area of building and maintenance money, but charters have recently been getting some state dollars for that too, because very few school districts share their local building funds. Now the charters are pushing for greater access to unused public school buildings, something districts oppose, and that's at the center of a big fight in the legislature this year. And Atkins says charters need that access because the extra state funding isn't enough.
And because of the incredible growth in charter schools, because more parents are exercising their choice, we are dividing that pot of $55 million among more and more students.
Representative George Moraitis, who is sponsoring the bill that would have given charters that access, says he plans on removing the language, citing a proposal in the Senate that would change it to give charters access to any unused public facility, whether a school or not. And Nikki Lowry, Florida director of the pro-school choice advocacy group Students First, says she believes the alternative option could work.
We Students First believe that everything is fair game, that if there's an empty public space, then absolutely. If there is an educational need for that space, that it should be filled in that way.
There are more than 500 charter schools in the state of Florida, and advocates continue to push for things like not limiting children to one school zone based on zip code. Over the past 15 years, Florida has created many ways to give parents more options, like private school vouchers and the ability to leave a failing school and go to another free of charge. They've also created virtual schooling. There's also now a push to give parents a greater say in the fate of failing traditional public schools. Critics of the school reform movement say all of this has led to two separate and not equal school systems. So why not level the playing field, create one set of rules to govern everybody, charter and traditional? Atkins says that would defeat the purpose.
Well, the whole purpose behind charter schools in the first place was to try and introduce innovation in our education system and to give parents that choice. When you make everybody the same, then you get away from that initial purpose.
Atkins says she's supportive of a proposal letting districts establish their own charter-esque schools as long as they're managed by an independent board. And so the fight goes on. School choice groups continue to push for greater funding parity, and traditional schools continue to voice opposition to a movement they see as separate and unequal. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
The Florida Senate Appropriations Committee today approved a plan to use about $200 million from a national mortgage settlement. The largest chunks would go to affordable housing programs. The plan would funnel $70 million to the State Housing Initiative Program, which makes money available for such things as rehabilitating houses and also helping people buy homes. Also, the plan would send $65 million to the State Apartment Incentive Loan Program, which provides low-interest loans for affordable housing. Other parts of the bill would send money to the court system to help handle a backlog of foreclosure cases and also to legal aid services for people who are facing foreclosure. Florida has been known as the Sunshine State since well before the legislature adopted that phrase as the state's official nickname in 1970. However, the sun was not shining over the Sunshine State's capital city the day of the Solar Energy Expo. The event happened at the joint Florida A&M, Florida State College of Engineering. There were seminars on how solar panels are built and installed. There were also sessions on American and foreign solar energy policies. Although there are those who say power directly from the sun is still not an economically viable fossil fuel alternative, you won't hear that from Joe Thomas. He heads McGee Solar of Dublin, Georgia, which was one of the expo's sponsors.
The price over many years ago was much higher, but the price of solar has drastically dropped to where it now is very competitive with almost anything. If you look at it and you use it and size the system appropriately for what's needed for that period of time.
Not only is the price of solar down, Thomas says, but the efficiency of solar is up. And that makes it more effective as part of a larger mix of energy sources feeding the commercial power grid.
And it's really great for the daytime when it shines, and especially for almost every area of peak loading comes into play in some point of the year. And it works great for that to help peak shade, but it also works great overall to help manage the loads during the daytime and to supplement.
Still, there is one big downside to solar panels. As electricity producers, they only work when the sun shines. All that will change when a simple, cost-effective battery comes along that can store a solar system's excess power until after the sun goes down.
If the battery systems become prevalent and the cost gets prevalent enough to where people can go off-grid, that's a large part of our population just from our entrepreneurship, but our really American spirit. We'd like to do that and control that, but that's a long way away. People don't realize the battery technology to get to that level the cost that it adds is a long way away right now.
But Thomas insists solar power still has lots of current application to the nation's power needs, and he thinks there's one big reason why solar isn't a bigger part of today's energy mix.
And most of the time it's in education. That's really the biggest misnomer, is all the misnomers out there and the way things are done.
Kim Ross with Rethink Energy Florida has been following the energy action, or lack thereof, during this year's Florida legislative session.
There's really virtually nothing that is moving in the legislature. Michelle Raywinkle Vasalinda put some things out, but I haven't seen very much movement. Meanwhile, they're moving on various forms of fossil fuels,
which Ross says frustrates supporters of renewable power.
We're almost at a three-year anniversary after the Deepwater Horizon spill. We still don't know the large impact of it, and we still haven't divvied out the money that is coming from BP, and yet we're back to talking about, well, should we drill for something or another? Instead of talking about how can we promote renewable energy in the state of Florida, in the Sunshine State.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. And now here's Ronald J. Evan with a look at what's coming up at the Capitol tomorrow.
The Senate is scheduled for a floor session at 2 Thursday afternoon with an ambitious agenda that includes the parent trigger bill that would allow parents to take over failing schools. Other measures up for debate, one setting out what drugs optometrists are allowed to prescribe, a bill requiring that health plans treat oral and IV cancer medications the same, a controversial measure eliminating permanent alimony. One of the main issues in the legislative session so far will hit the floor of the Senate, a ban on internet cafes. And the Senate will also take up a limit on how unmanned drones can be used by police. The House also goes into session at 1:30 Thursday afternoon, and among the numerous bills up for consideration include several dealing with education, a charter school bill that revises charter school contracts, disclosure requirements, renewals, and termination, and requires annual reviews. There is a digital learning bill that provides requirements for funding home education students enrolled in the Florida Virtual School, and a school bullying measure that prohibits bullying or harassment with respect to computer-related activities or cyberbullying. And the parent trigger bill will also be taken up in the Florida House. Between 4 and 6 p.m. tomorrow, there will be a Guardian at Litem Day reception in the First District Court of Appeals. It will honor the work of guardians ad litem representing abused and neglected children across the state. And those are some of the items on the busy agenda at the Capitol for Thursday, April 4th. I'm Ronald J. Evan.
Finally tonight, a bill that would ban texting while driving is heading to the House floor after passing its final committee today. Jessica Palumbo reports the bill and its Senate companion have bipartisan sponsorship.
95% of Floridians support the ban on texting while driving. That's according to a poll from the University of Florida.
I don't know about y'all, but I've been in this process for 7 years, and I've never heard something that has that much support by your constituents and mine.
That's the bill's House sponsor, Representative Doug Holder, presenting the texting ban at its final committee stop on Wednesday. The measure would make texting a secondary offense, meaning you'd have to be pulled over for something else, like speeding, and then police could also issue a ticket for using a handheld communication device. Florida is one of just 5 states that don't ban texting on the road.
We're talking about an activity that is equivalent to drinking 4 beers very quickly and getting behind the wheel of a car. Now, we all know the dangers of that. We have laws that are against that.
Even though texting would still not be a primary offense, meaning you could be pulled over for just texting, Holder says he believes the bill does go far enough.
It starts the campaign that tells our children, tells our parents that texting while driving is an inappropriate behavior and is illegal in the state of Florida. And I believe that once we do that with a PR campaign right behind it, We will change the way our culture thinks about those activities.
The House and Senate versions of the bill have passed a combined 5 committees, with the only no vote coming on Wednesday from Representative Jimmy Patronis, a Republican from Panama City. Patronis says he fears
creating another reason why we have more government intruding in our lives.
Bill co-sponsor Representative Irv Slosberg spoke outside the House chambers on Wednesday.
It's just amazing that it's such a battle for public safety, but it is a battle for public safety.
After his teenage daughter was killed in a car crash, Slosberg spent 20 years trying to get the law changed to require people to wear seatbelts. But he says it's a new day in Florida under House Speaker Will Weatherford.
They're bringing the bills out of the drawers, and it's more of a bipartisan atmosphere in the House of Representatives today than it was in years past. Come on up here. Move up here, kids. Move up.
Slosberg was surrounded by children who attend school online through the Florida Virtual School. They're supporting the bill with a campaign called TTYL, or Texting Takes Young Lives.
It's a given. It's common sense. Let's outlaw texting and driving.
That's virtual school student, 17-year-old Jenny Rubin.
I've been in fear of my life when I've been behind the wheel. People do not get how absolutely serious this is.
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimates 28% of accidents occur when people are using their phone. Representative Dave Kerner, another co-sponsor of the bill, says he saw the effects firsthand in his former job as a police officer in the rural city of Alachua.
And it was so frustrating to show up to traffic crashes. It was so frustrating and sad to see people driving down the road texting. And me as a law enforcement officer, I couldn't do anything about it.
Holder says now is the time for Florida to give them that power. He says he and his wife were watching a news report about 5 young girls who were texting while driving when they crashed into a tractor trailer, killing all of them.
My wife turned to me and said, "You know, Doug, I'm not a very political person, but if there's one thing that you do while you're in Tallahassee, you should ban texting while driving."
The bill has some exceptions, like allowing the use of talk-to-text technology, reporting emergencies, and allowing texting while the car is stopped, like at a red light. It heads now to the full House. Meanwhile, the Senate version has one more committee stop. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank, Thomas Andrew Gustafson, and Stephen Rodriguez. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2013 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida Police Benevolent Association, representing law enforcement, correctional, and correctional probation officers, strong advocates of keeping law enforcement and correctional services a core public function of government. The Florida PBA online at flpba.org. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through American Airlines with daily direct flights from Tallahassee to Miami and Dallas, with connections to over 270 domestic and international destinations. Fares and information available online at aa.com. And from
Hopping Green & Sams Law Firm, for over 30 years, with offices in Tallahassee, representing clients facing challenges and opportunities with government. This is Diane Carr of Hopping Green & Sams, on the web at hgslaw.com.
WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.